So it says here, guys, that they're accepting auditions for the new Star Wars movie from everybody. I think we should try that out.
Yeah, I can do Star Wars noises. Isn't that cool?
All I got's the gravelly voice.
No, I got you beat. Me's are gonna be on the Star Wars.
Holy crap!
You still have that thing?
Hello and welcome to another episode of Epic. Nerd rage is the topic today, and we shall rage. We must rage. Rage against the things that we don't like because they're wrong and stuff. Anyway, I don't know. With me here to talk about nerd rage is, in the studio, Richard.
I'm so angry right now.
And Andy.
Good day!
And joining us remote are our old friends, Nutty.
Hello, everyone.
And the clockwork
dog. I'm Tech, and I'm mad that you couldn't get your intro right. What the heck?
Oh. Okay, all right. So that's fair. That's fair. No, that's okay. We're all, this is a safe place.
They are remote on our satellite office on the moon, just in case anyone was wondering.
Okay.
The moon. We're from the moon.
Oh, you know what? I didn't queue up the Where's Joel again. I don't even know why we did that. But where is Joel today?
Where's Joel?
Yeah.
I heard it's involved something involving a yak and a fur coat.
Mm-hmm.
He's a Sherpa?
It might start with a yak.
and end with a fur coat.
All right. So what do we want to nerd rage about first? Anybody want to throw something out there for the first segment?
Oh, you're staring at me.
First game, really DLC.
There we go. So DLC and IAP, or in-app purchases, which have become a pretty big trend lately.
All the rage. Here's a free game, which you can't do anything in until you give us all your monies.
This started with EA really took the mantle on this and kind of ran with it. But did it really start with them, I wonder?
I can just nerd rage about EA all day.
Yes,
that can
easily.
That's a whole show. I will never buy an EA game again.
Well, let me give you an example of a game that did it right and a game that did it badly. Mass Effect added extra content as the fans demanded it and as time went on. And as Mass Effect 3 was finished, they produced an extra DLC where they brought all of the voice actors back to sort of say goodbye to the trilogy. It was called Citadel. It was done very, very well.
Wasn't that where they redid the ending because everyone hated it?
No, that was free DLC. That was free content where they redid the three endings, but then they added this extra chapter, which is the your characters all go to the Citadel to enjoy a bit of R&R before they go on the final big mission, and it's basically the story of them trying to organize a party. And depending on the choices you've made throughout the three games, it changes how the party is organized and how who talks to who and who gets drunk and who ends up drunk in the shower and who shacks up with who at the end. And it's a great capper to the series.
Oh, that's
a game that did it wrong. L.A. Noire. Mm-hmm. The day the game was released, there was three extra chapters that you could buy for $9.99 apiece, along with special guns and special suits for your main character, all for money, all on day one. So if you had all that content already made, why not just put it in the gosh darn game? Hmm. Oh, because that way they can...
Extra monies.
Get me for extra money.
And they call that...
Because the video games didn't cost enough as it is.
They call that day one DLC.
Which is happening often nowadays.
And, and that's my point. Is they that badly, and that is garbage. Yeah.
Actually, worse than that, though.
I'm sorry, go ahead. Is a sign of somebody not doing their job right, in my opinion. I know it's a money grab, but it's the kind of thing that makes me not want to buy a game.
Yeah. Worse than that, though, I'd say, is actually DLC that comes locked on the game itself.
Yes.
It's like, I'm looking up a list right now, which I emailed out to your guys a few minutes ago. On games like Marvel vs. Capcom 3. No, sorry. It was Ultimate. It was actually Ultimate Marvel. Their Marvel vs. Capcom 3. There were two characters locked on the disc for $10 a piece. So congratulations. You spent $60 on a brand new game. Now give us an extra $20 to actually get all the characters which you're already holding in your hand. Mm-hmm. just yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, that's BS.
The ones that the ones that get me are the ones where you can't actually finish the game without downloading the extra bits and paying for the extra bits. Mm-hmm. You know, it's one thing to offer, you know, extra content, but to not be able to see the end of the game without buying the extra, you know, chapters, especially when they're released right at the beginning. Like, you know, oh, here's your game. You send us another $30, we'll give you the ending.
Mm. Now, Google has come under fire recently because they're not really policing the in-app purchases. Because in-app purchases tend to go around the Google Store. It's one of the reasons why they have them. They put the game out for free on Google Store, but you've got to make in-app purchases to continue, and those in-app purchases go through the software and therefore are billed directly to the company, and Google doesn't get their piece of the pie, so to speak. Now, they've changed their rules such that their in-app purchases, I believe, now go through the Google Store, and it is tracked in Google Play.
Oh, that's good.
So Apple hasn't followed suit with this yet.
What gets me is the especially for those like cell phone games that have all the purchases you can make with them, they tend to put that in like kids games, like so stuff you'd give to your kid to keep them busy while you're trying to order dinner,
yeah,
or something like that.
Oh yeah,
and the really really big button.
And then they can exactly, or the ones that'll say buy this like just before you start the level, and you know the kids end up buying a whole bunch of crap.
It's really shady. It's the malware of the cell phone market now.
It's the few ruining it for the most.
Mm-hmm. Well,
Tech,
actually,
do you want to tell the story about our friend and their son spending $500?
Yeah, $500 in in-app purchases for this army building game because the kid was confused and thought it was in-game currency.
Ouch.
Oh.
So he just kept hitting the buttons to keep purchasing, you know, more troops or whatever, more supplies for his army, and then when the phone bill comes that month, it's a $500 phone bill.
Poor kid.
Which is funny, actually, because this is how the beginning of Simpsons Tapped Out starts, actually. It is by Homer actually playing this Tapped Out-style game like that. That was my pad. And, So it's like, oh, what the heck? You know, $500? Like, I'll blame the kid.
And it's funny, because that game has in-app purchases.
Yes, too. It does.
Yeah.
But again, EA owns it, so...
Right, right.
You should just change your name to IA.
No, sorry. Worse yet, it's EA and Fox. So.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
I there are times when in-app purchases I'm totally fine with. Like, for instance, Elder Signs. You can buy, or not Elder Signs, sorry, Small World. You can buy the expansions in the app. And that's totally fine. And you understand what you're buying. And it doesn't limit the game. It's just I get different races. And I get the expansions that are available for the physical board game. So it's not like it's not a scam to me. My problem is all of those games. I will never get another EA game because when they started with the in-app purchases, I tried it out just to say, you know what, let's see what this is like. It's a free game. Let me try this in-app purchase. And they kept giving me an error. Next thing I know, all of my iTunes credits are gone. I ended up calling AppleCare, and they refunded me, and they said, yeah, this is a serious problem. Now, AppleCare refunding your iTunes account, that doesn't happen, which means they know there's a problem. Yeah. But EA is still doing this nonsense. So I will never buy another one of those games. But I hear people talking all the time about that game Candy Crush, and you can't get past certain levels unless you pay. Mm-hmm. And they keep doing it.
That's
and
one,
I don't understand.
Candy Crush is one, even if it had no in-app purchasing or anything like that, mm-hmm. would be a game that I would never play. Just agreed. Because of how much of a bad word they have been with the word candy. Well, they tried to patent the word candy and were trying to sue people who were using the word candy in their games, even stuff that was made before them.
So Candyland.
Yeah, yeah.
How in the world do you patent a word like candy? How can you?
Well, exactly.
I don't know, but it's all bogus considering Candy Crush is nothing but a bejeweled ripoff.
Exactly.
Yeah.
and that's what people pointed out. And then there was like a plethora of like games with the word candy and were flooding the game markets.
Oh, they're just kind of flipping them off now.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, Flappy Birds.
It's sort of like a celebrity going, I don't like my picture that's online. I take it off the internet. like that Beyonce picture. I'm not sure. You guys must have seen this by now. Apparently, there's someone took a picture of Beyonce during one of her concerts mid dance move, and she looks like someone had shot her with a ray that turned her into just this weird, lumpy, gross. It's the funniest picture ever, and it's very, very unflattering. But the fact that she insisted on trying to get it removed from the internet was just absolutely hilarious.
It's the internet,
and it spawned a whole group of memes based around that.
I'm sorry, Beyonce. I don't think you understand what the internet is.
Yep, just found it.
Yeah. So, anyways, yeah, guys. Back to the game thing, though. It's definitely EA. Like, not to harp on them too much, but they kind of brought it upon themselves. My wife has been a huge fan of The Sims and SimCity and that kind of stuff. And when SimCity 4 was coming out, she was so excited to get it. And I'm like, well, let's hold off, honey. Let me watch some reviews on it and see what's going on. I am so glad we did not purchase this game. Almost all the things that made the game enjoyable back in the day were, was now taken out. A bunch of new things that were the really awesome stuff that, of course, you buy the game to do these things are all now locked out. There is DLC. There is DRM at every turn.
You have to be online to play it now.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but there's something else we can nerd rage against. DRM.
Oh, yes. A DRM gone crazy. I understand.
Up to a point, it makes sense. I understand basically trying to basically hold on to your license.
Right.
Let's define that for the audience. That's digital rights management. And that's little things they put into the software to prevent that are supposed to prevent piracy. But in a lot of cases, what ends up happening is DRM is badly handled and ends up shackling the player. Example, games like Diablo 3 and the SimCity, where you have to be online to play the game. So I couldn't put the game, say, on my laptop and play while I'm on the road, unless I'm somehow connected to the internet. The worst I've ever heard was, do you guys remember the game Spore?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so made by the SimCity people, but it was about the evolution of a creature. The game, the disc was locked so that you could install the disc a maximum of 3 times, and after that your CD was bricked.
That's hilarious.
Couldn't you call and request more, because it does an online check. It basically increments a counter on a server somewhere.
Well, probably not, though, too, because the same company, I don't know if they went through with it or not, but they were talking for the longest time about trying to stop people buying used games. Mm-hmm. So if you purchase a used game, or let's say that I gave you my game I'm done with, you have to go to them and pay a $5 or $10 fee to unlock the game for yourself.
The Xbox One.
That was Microsoft out the Xbox One.
Yep.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Xbox One was supposed to have this DRM in it that wouldn't allow you to play used games. And they were basically throwing the big middle finger up at stores like EB and GameStop.
Yep. Yeah. They removed it in the 11th hour, though, I think, just before it got released.
Because even Sony, like, their conferences for that was hilarious. There was the CEO of Sony Japan and CEO of, their Sony America, like, they're here is how you share a game, and they treat each other and they handed the game. Like, there you go.
Well, apparently on some Sony systems, Sony games, you can actually play multiplayer with other players remotely. So, say if I had a game and I wanted to play with you, and we both had like the PS4, we could remotely play that same game with only me having the game.
It's like a spawn copy of the game almost kind of thing.
We can do the same thing with some games on the Nintendo DS handhelds.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Where love as that. Long as I've got a copy of the game, I can have up to 3 of my friends and we can all play together. And we just, I sort of like Wi-Fi the game to you guys. Mm-hmm. And as long as we're all connected, we can all play together with one parent copy.
Now, the funny thing about the needing to be online and whatnot, you mentioned SimCity. And it was the latest version of SimCity. I can't remember what they called it.
Person number 4.
Yeah. Anyways,
1 or 2.
The big claim was that the reason that you had to be online all the time was because of the way it was built. It wouldn't function offline. And that was what they were sticking to.
Well, they were saying it's because the world was so complicated that it needed to farm the processing off into their main servers.
Yeah, or something like that.
And that wasn't true at all.
Of course not. Until some guy posted a video on YouTube saying, hey, check this out. And essentially he made it play offline without any issue.
Yeah.
And after that, then they issued a patch that allowed that to happen. Mm-hmm.
Same thing happened to Diablo 3, where Diablo 3 came out and you had to be online to play it at all times. And they said, no, it has to work this way. It's for balancing and fairness, et cetera, et cetera. Diablo 3 recently got ported to consoles, and the console version will work offline.
The reason they did that was in Diablo 2, there was a lot of hacks and breaks in the game that would let you just sort of uber power yourself. To the point where it was ridiculous. You're ridiculously overpowered for everything. With Diablo 3, the fact that you can play with your friends on Battle.net and have them jump into your existing game, if you were to and initially they also had an auction house. So if you were able to duplicate all your items or superpower yourself really easily using a bit of a hack, then that would really throw off the balance. So that's why. If they let you do it offline, you could kind of, apparently there was a risk of messing like that, and then when you reconnect, then you. Mm-hmm. So I think that was their logic behind that one.
I can understand the logic that these companies have with this, but the idea that everyone will always have access to the internet is ridiculous. Even today, if tech is overseas, he's going to want to play video games. He's not going to be able to connect to the internet to play these video games.
Yeah, but
if I'm on the road, if I'm in my car and I want to work on, and I've seen this, they tried this with certain applications that have business side to it. If I'm on the road, if I'm in my car and I need to work, I need to be able to open my application. I can't connect to the internet. And so this concept of, and I understand, we don't want you hacking the game. We don't want you breaking this. We want to protect ourselves. It's all well and good, but you're messing us up.
Mm-hmm.
You're stopping people from actually being able to use your product, and that's it.
And pretty much the final word is you're punishing your loyal customers for something somebody else is doing. All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to listen to some Paul and Storm, who off their new album, Ball Pit. Yeah, we know them. I was supposed to push their album a long time ago, and I haven't because we haven't been producing anything for a while.
But, well, to be fair, our studio kind of imploded.
That's true.
I'd say melted's better.
I think we're going to be listening to this song.
You're listening to Epic. Now bigger than 80s hair. Return after these messages.
This song could be in a commercial. It's simple and acoustic, so it's utterly non-threatening. And it's pretty and sincere, and there's not too many words. You can talk about insurance or a car, and all the spaces in between. This song should be in a commercial or a montage in a movie where a young couple starts to fall in love, or the credits of an independent film. We are looking for exposure, so please call. We'll hammer out a deal. Thank you. be in a commercial.
From the ViCast, and you're tuned in to Epic at geekblue.com, a lovely place to explore your inner geek. Come on in, we have pie.
And welcome back to Epic Nerd Rage. You just heard Paul and Storm, this song. You can go on over to geekly.com, take a look at our show notes page for this episode. You'll be able to find links to their website, their Bandcamp, iTunes, Amazon, and you can find them on Google Play as well. We are nerd raging, and this section of the show, this segment of the show, we're going to nerd rage a little bit about Star Trek. You know what I'd like to nerd rage about right now? This damn chair. Oh my God, why would anybody put this chair in a studio?
I don't know.
Yes, except for the fact,
I don't know. I was the one who put it in the studio. I don't know why.
Ironically, I was the one who donated it to the studio.
Did you?
I used to be my computer chair.
I was to blame you then.
I got rid of it because it squeaked.
Oh, right. And you gave it to a radio station.
Perfect radio station. Thanks. Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, I'm going to have maybe some WD-40 will fix it. Anyway, moving
stop
on.
Moving.
WD-40 is not a lubricant. Some white grease
clean it and then let you lubricate it, but you better have a separate lubricant.
Yeah, lithium grease
is better. Actually, sorry.
Nerd rage about how to fix stuff.
The proper lubrication for an office chair.
Yeah. Well, anyway.
Star Trek.
Fred, you have a particular disdain for the new Star Trek movies?
I do. The movies themselves, okay, they're good sci-fi, but they're not Star Trek. And my problem is mainly with the studio that refuses to trust its fans. Like, oh, well, we don't want to make a movie for Star Trek fans. We want to make a movie for everybody. So they take everything that's good and awesome about Star Trek and they throw it out the window. They leave the tropes to keep the nerds coming back. And then they make a movie to appeal to everybody. So who do they get? They get J.J. gosh darn Abrams to come in and lens flare the crap out of the thing.
Let's flare the movie.
He doesn't even like Star Trek.
No, and he's admitted it. I'm not a fan of this, but I'll make a movie because they're paying me cubic dump trucks of money. It is...
And he's now doing Star Wars, so let's see how that goes.
Chekhov giving his security code to the computer, and the joke is he can't say the letter V, so he can't pronounce the word Victor, so it's Victor, and then the very next character he says in the password is the number 5. So he goes, Victor 5. Like, oh, come on now, people. A little bit of editing.
Yeah.
I didn't even realize that.
And at least Walter Koenig actually was Russian and grew up with his father with a Russian accent and could do a real Russian accent.
Yeah. I don't know. I think the guy they got to do Bones was really, really good.
Bones was fantastic. Yeah. He was like the best part of that movie.
Yep, agreed.
But the only parts of Star Trek that they kept was the way Kirk sits in the chair, the way he becomes amorous with the green girl, the way Spock does the eyebrow thing, the way Bones is surly, the way Chekhov can't say five or Victor. You know, they kept all of those little tropes things, and then they threw everything out to crap, and they made an action movie.
Yeah, it was a little bit overboard, some of the scenes. Now, it wasn't a bad movie overall. I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed it.
You know, it was good sci-fi.
I really enjoyed the Star Trek movies. I am a huge Trekkie. I was very happy with the characterizations that they did. But to me, the new Trek movies are fan fiction.
Did you hear about the next one?
Yeah, they're going campier. They're going more true to the original series.
Yeah, they got, what's his face?
Yeah, him.
He helped Abrams with the previous two. And then he actually dropped out of what he was doing now. He was supposed to be filming or directing another movie, and he dropped out of it to go and do the Star Trek movies because he's such a big fan of the series. And I also heard a rumor that they're bringing Shatner back in the next movie.
I think Shatner's bringing Shatner back in the next movie because
I'm scared. I have the problem with a lot of franchises and a lot of not just movies, but I see this in music and in other genres as well, where they're like, well, you know, we're not worried about the original fan base because we've already got them locked, and we're going to try to appeal to new people. Well, just once, okay, can you make a Star Trek movie for the Star Trek fans, and I promise you it'll work and it'll make money at the box office, because there's a lot more Star Trek fans than they think there are.
Yeah.
Like, rubber ear wearing, going to convention, going Trekkies are
dollar for anything Trek.
Mm? Yeah,
we'll give our last dollar for anything Trek, and you can see this by the success for the Star Trek fan films. Star Trek Renegades did a Kickstarter. That was Renegades, right? I believe so. That did a Kickstarter to raise money to make a fan film. Star Trek Continuum. You look at all of the fan films that have been come out in the last 5 years. Star Trek fans will do it. Give our last dollars for it.
Which one was the one?
Don't ignore us.
Sorry. Hmm? Which one was the one with Grant Imahara as Sulu?
Oh, that was Star Trek Continues.
Yeah.
It wasn't a movie. It was a web-based series.
Yeah. Now, that one was pretty cool, except I really have an issue with who they cast for Kirk in that one.
I have an issue who they cast for Bones.
He looked perfectly the part of Captain Kirk, but he sounded absolutely nothing like what a Kirk should sound like.
And he was trying to make himself sound like Kirk.
He was, but his voice was way too high.
That's always the issue when casting actors. It's like, do I cast somebody who looks perfect, or do I cast somebody who can play the role well? And I'm going to switch gears here. When Game of Thrones first came out and I heard that Peter Dinklage was playing Tyrion, I said to myself, he is way too pretty to play Tyrion. But you know what? It works because he's a good actor. Mm-hmm. So you can get away with having somebody not look like a character if they can act well. The reverse is not true.
Chris Pine doesn't look like William Shatner.
No.
Chris Pine doesn't do the school of stop acting.
Thankfully.
But the first time you see him in the movie, when he sits down in the chair and he does like the little sideways lean, he's got the idea of the character of a young Kirk down.
Yeah,
and
he does.
That sells it.
Well,
that's one of the saving graces of the movie.
Carl Urban looks nothing like DeForest Kelly, but he is perfect.
Mm. I don't know. I think he looks enough like a younger DeForest Kelly.
A bit. He's got the kind of the funny. Well, DeForest Kelly was a little ganglier, I think, than
he's like a more buff DeForest Kelly.
Well, that's his younger.
It's an alternate universe,
right?
In this one.
Yeah, exactly, it's all it is.
They have more protein in this.
You know what I like?
There's a gym in this building in this one. That's what it was.
When I see the new Star Trek movies, I like to think of them as if in the Next Generation universe, somebody made a based on a true story movie action flick about Kirk, and that's what this is. This is a movie within a movie.
We're all watching this in the holodeck somewhere.
So speaking of the new movies, can I nerd rage that I'm sorry, but Benedict Cumberbatch's character was not Khan.
I would agree.
He was future Sherlock Holmes.
Well,
yes.
I could not see that.
Yeah. So I love him.
I didn't like his portrayal of the character at all. It just felt forced and hammy to me. I don't know.
I would have in my head canon. Yes, I have a headcanon. In my headcanon.
I like headcanons.
That's cool.
They didn't wake up Khan. They woke up one of his guys.
Head yeah.
Cannon. And Khan was still frozen. And this guy was taking on the persona of Khan to be his influence. Mm-hmm. And that's my headcanon. And that's how it fixes it. Because there is no way. Number one, he's white. Like,
that's true.
White.
Yeah.
Okay?
So
number two, he's just not.
No, he doesn't have any semblance of appearance of Khan. No. He's a great actor. Don't get me wrong.
Oh yeah. That being said, he was a very good villain.
Yeah. If he didn't have the Khan character to live up to,
he
would have been really nice. If they would have just given him a different name.
That reminds me of something that really, really sort of irked me in those movies was that teleport gun thing that, you know, you know, it's a, was it warp teleporter or whatever? Let's just transport to the Klingon homeworld.
If we want to go into the science of these movies,
well, there was
that's a whole different show. Kind of
Mark, ruins, I've got one for you on that aspect.
Well, the teleporter, though,
they're being chased by the giant ship whose size changes in every shot.
Yeah.
And they're flying at faster than the speed of light. That's 186,000 miles per second. They're flying at you know, faster than the speed of light, and then bang, they get shot, they drop out of warp. We're less than 200,000 miles
from Earth.
From Earth, says someone reading a computer screen. Okay, so they're inside the orbit of the moon, and yep, there's the moon, and they're right next to it. So at least that was accurate. But more second, and they were there. So
the directors and writers had no perception of space, it seemed, because they dropped out right next to Earth, which means in about a split second, approximately one quarter of a second, they would have been in the Earth, and they had no intention of dropping out there. They only dropped out because they were shot.
However, that takes into that makes the assumption that they fell out in a straight line. You're going that fast. The size of a solar system really isn't that big of a target. So if you think about it, they could have been a very good distance away and planning to stop just outside the solar system or something along those lines. But when they got hit and they got knocked out, it means that their end coordinate where they were planning to get out of warp changed.
Well, it went to the side. It would have went further ahead.
They went in a spot where they didn't. We're assuming this is a linear straight line.
They were just warping from Saturn or Jupiter, I think.
Were they?
Yeah, they were inside the solar system.
Oh, geez, I don't know if there's any reason to really...
Why would they do that?
It would be a short warp. It would be like a 2-second warp jump. It wouldn't
Let's not forget that they also leave space dock under warp. You can't do that. According to Star Trek canon, you cannot leave space dock under warp. You must leave, not even on full impulse. You're supposed to leave under quarter impulse. But
thrusters,
you just can't do that according to the canon. And they left space dock under warp.
Well, they broke that in the original movies, though.
It destroys the spaceport, doesn't
it? Well, no, they broke that in the original movies when they stole the Enterprise and they warped out of space dock. And about three or four other ships tried to warp with them but couldn't because Scotty disabled them.
So you see, Excelsior, I think, was the other one. Here's another one, scale. You see the size of the Enterprise in the second movie in very good detail when a shuttlecraft comes and lands on the back dock, and you now have context for how big the Enterprise is in relation to a human being. Mm-hmm. There's a point of conversation where one of the characters says that the new ship is three times or two times the size of the Enterprise. So now you have context. But in every scene where that other ship is, it either grows or shrinks in size and it never has a proper scale. When it crash lands on the Earth and its saucer section is scything through the downtown of a major city, the thickness of the saucer section is taller than skyscrapers.
That it crashed down downtown and not in some little model version of that city.
That was actually
in the park.
In Denmark. That was Legoland.
Not Legoland.
You know, it looked like a giant, you know, disaster with, you know, thousands being killed, but really they just landed in the park.
Well, I mean, the middle decks, there's only two decks in the very forward saucer sections. There's like two or three decks. I believe that's it. Because you could see, you just look and you see windows. Oh, there's two sets of windows, so it's two decks tall, which means it might be four stories tall if you're accounting for Jeffrey's tubes and the hull and all that stuff like that. It's not going to be half the size of a building. No, they scaled things up and down for dramatic effect, just like they did with the story and reality.
No one will notice that. Those Star Trek geeks wouldn't notice things like that. They're not focused on details.
They pick up on nothing.
There's a website out there that shows the same inconsistency in every episode of Next Generation. Whenever there's a Klingon bird of prey, depending on the scene and the effect that they're trying to show, bird of preys grow and shrink.
They do,
They can be operated with a depending if it's cold out, right? Am I right? A bird of prey can be operated by six warriors, so they're meant to be small, little like U-boat style Yep. You know, sneaky attack ships, but they'll grow to be larger than the Enterprise or much, much smaller, depending on the scene they're in.
I just assume that was camera angle and where they were.
It also takes a variable number of photon torpedoes to blow them up.
Of course.
In the space battle on DS9, 3 shots and their shields collapse and they blow up. But on Enterprise, they can go long, strung out battles with phaser fire and everything
That's
else.
Just, they have better guys in the shields, maybe.
Sorry. It takes the Buffy vampire rules into effect. If there are more vampires fighting Buffy, they're weaker. But if there's one vampire fighting Buffy, the vampire is stronger, much like the birds of prey. If it's only one bird of prey, it's much larger. If there's a few of them, they're much smaller.
Right. That explains the size.
Of shared health pool is what it is.
No, it explains the size difference because if there's many of them, it means that they did not get the chance to combine into one super ship.
Okay, so like Voltron-esque.
They're like Voltron. Klingon Voltron.
That's right. So I'm going to just shift tones a little bit, though, and go from the new ones back to the old ones for a second.
We've got like 30 seconds before break.
Star Trek Generations.
Dun, dun, dun.
Okay, talk about one thing really quick that's like, well, let's make a fan movie. Fans wanted Kirk versus, you know, Picard, and
well, you know what?
This is what we get, and the movie itself, sort of say, it was atrocious.
Unless there's something else you guys want a nerd rage about, we could continue this particular rage.
This could be a show based on itself.
Yeah, well, it might be most of this show.
I can actually defend Generations, but before we sign out, I just want to note, actually, you got it wrong, Mark. They were out of space dock in Search for Spock before they went to warp, and the Excelsior wanted to transwarp to catch up with them, which is the only way that they could catch up with them, but that was disabled by Scotty.
And you get owned.
Oh, wow. Well, they were just outside of space dock. They were really close to it.
They still shouldn't have. It was against protocols, but...
Well, they shouldn't have stole the ship either, really. Okay, we're going to go for another break. We're going to listen to another Paul and Storm song, and we'll be back. Maybe we'll continue this nerd rage. Maybe we'll start another one. We'll see what happens.
You're listening to Epic. Now with more
overused radio effects.
We will return after these messages.
Last night I watched you sleeping. Tenderly I cried, because there was no keeping down the feeling deep inside. I knew that I was blessed to be right there next to you. Mere words could not express it, how the love had filled me through. You were a vision almost holy as my teardrops kissed your head. Your eyes, they opened slowly, then you looked at me.
This is Robert Mayer from The String. You're listening to Epic.
And we are back once again. You are listening to Paul and Storm's... hold on, what were we listening to?
Music.
Boy, if I was prepared.
It's in the show notes.
It's in the show notes. It's Paul and Storm something. Right here with you. That's what it was. Once again, you can head on over to geekglue.com, check out the show notes for this episode where you can find all the links to their website, Bandcamp, iTunes, Amazon, Google Play. Go out, buy it, and freaking own it, man.
And if you do buy it, tweet them and let them know that you bought it after hearing from us on Epic Series.
Yeah, the two songs we played today, I was kind of had a toss up which one of the songs from their album I played. They're all pretty good, but the two songs that I played today are, they both have music videos and are free to listen to on YouTube, which is why I picked them. All right, we're going to keep on nerd raging here, and we're going to pick on Star Wars a little bit, I think. And then if you're going to pick on Star Wars, man, the big target is, well, the big three targets is episodes 1, 2, and 3, or what I like to call the green screens.
Oh, my.
Because CG screens and special effects makes for a good movie.
Well, apparently with CG and special effects, you no longer need to care about character development.
That's right. And acting and storyline and...
Well, let's be honest. To be fair, as much as we all love episode 4, 5, and 6,
oh yeah, there's issues there too.
Plot development and character dialogue are not Lucas's strong suits.
They are not his strong suit, but they are much better than those prequels. And the other thing is, these, well, most of the actors in the prequels were pretty good, but there were some big stinkers. There weren't any stinkers in the originals. And the other thing is, what you also have to understand is that for the first Star Wars movie, Lucas's wife had a lot of influence. Then they got divorced, and he tried to remove all of the influence that she had. For instance, Star Wars, she says, Luke has to get the girl because Luke is the hero. The anti-hero can't get the girl. Luke has to get the girl. So they get divorced, and Luke and Leia, brother and sister, can't happen. So
I thought that was a good twist.
It was a good twist, but it makes
already kissed
Star Wars a little. Wait a minute.
But that's what makes it a twist. It's like, oh damn, they already quit. You know.
Oh, by the way, thanks for the spoilers.
Yes, total spoiler alert.
All right. Well,
jerk, I'm watching that next week.
I'm gonna assume that everybody listening to this has already seen the Star Wars movies, all six of them. Because if you haven't, big spoilers if you haven't already heard all this stuff before.
Now, that also leads me to, I'm thinking the new ones and Luke and Leia being brother and sister and all that. And I just remembering the scene where they were born. You know, they have the technology to fix a guy who fell in lava and is missing some limbs. But, oh my, she just... didn't want to live anymore.
She lost the will to live.
What's your medical degree in?
Says the robot with the spatula hands.
You know, it's so frustrating. And that's the other thing. I mean, heck, I can even say that there are some good points about the first movies. But one of my big problems with Lucas is he will start with really great female characters and ruin them. Padme was awesome. She kicked butt. She fought. She stood up for herself. Episode 3, she's just standing there waiting for Anakin the entire time. And then her heart is broken and she loses the will to live. I'm sorry that your children don't give you will enough. If you can't live for yourself, you can't live for your children. What the heck?
Like, or your people?
I think that
it's horrible. She loses all power. She gives all of her political power to Jar Jar Binks. I mean, everything is just wrong. You've got this amazing character who, by the way, is being acted by a fantastic actress, and she's standing there in a robe waiting for Anakin.
I think those birth robots are programmed to say that when they
fail.
Up.
Yeah.
You know, so in order to avoid a malpractice suit.
There's a few problems, though. First, they were tied to canon, which said that her, you know, basically her mother died of a broken heart. So they had to have that happen.
Yeah, but I don't think it actually was a literal thing. It was more like, you know, a metaphorical.
Maybe, but they
apparently
had to,
not.
They,
but
they had to follow suit with that. Now, the thing is, you could have done that in much better ways.
Oh, yes.
Than just kind of.
She was the worst Disney princess ever.
So. I want to mention one more thing that's going to rage a little bit, and my solution to it.
Yes.
Midichlorians.
Huh. Do we even have to say that? I mean,
MacGuffins.
Who isn't nerd raging over midichlorians? You don't need to explain. It's the Force, okay? Just the Force. You
The Force is.
Explain in a scientific way. You don't have to quantify this idea of a higher power. Just... go with it. Midichlorians is just the worst.
Well, what was that robot chicken joke? Yeah. It's like, midichlorians. Well, the Force is actually just microscopic bacteria in your DNA. Look, if you're not going to take this seriously, I'm out.
What I like to think about them as, this is what I like to think.
Go ahead.
People who are force sensitive emanate the force. The force swirls around them. This was a said either in the cartoons or in the movie at some point. Mm-hmm. I think
said by it's said by Obi-Wan in episode 4.
Yeah. So I think midichlorians might just be creatures that thrive in those situations. So they tend to, like all the other bacteria on the human body, they tend to procreate a little bit more. So they're a good indicator. They're a good litmus test to who has the force swirling around them. But they do in no way contribute to your ability to use the force.
So essentially you're saying that the midichlorians are like Jedi athlete's foot.
Yeah, except not itchy, right?
Jedi herpes.
I'm going to do a little bit of cross promotion here because there was an interview that Mark Kilfoyle, our program director, recorded, and it was played on Prof, paraphrasing, which is another show on CHSR, about this woman who had a Kickstarter because she photographs orbs. Okay, right. So now you're making me think that midichlorians are these orbs that are attracted by the force.
Well, they're not. Well, they're bacteria. I think they're bacteria,
baby,
and they
midichlorians. Orbs aren't bacteria. Orbs are little pieces of dust that get caught in the flash.
Yes. But this woman seems to think you can attract them if you're very excited.
If you go into an old dusty house, yes, you can.
Yes.
Anyway,
they're all over my house. I must really attract them. It's haunted.
There's orbs everywhere.
I have orb bunnies going down my stairs. Anyway, so going back to the midichlorians. So I like to think of it as, and I like to think of them as the dark, like in the earlier movies, they're in the dark ages of this thing, and they're actually thinking that the midichlorians give them the power. They don't realize yet that the midichlorians are just there because they have access to the force the way they do. So later on in the next three movies, maybe they might mention something like, we used to think that these things gave us the power.
So it turns out we figured it out, and
they have nothing to do with it.
Wow, we were wrong.
Yeah. I'd like to see
it. So basically, Mark has his headcanon has fixed midichlorians for him, as my headcanon has fixed Khan in Star Trek for me.
Yes. Well, if we're gonna nerd rage about Star Wars, let's talk about one more thing. Mark, can you define a parsec for me?
Actually, yes, I can. I can look it up.
Let me ask Mr. Google. So you can't, but Google can. Okay.
No, ran a marathon in only 12
here
miles.
We go. It's 3.0856 times 10 to the 16 meters, and I believe it's sometimes it's called an astronomical unit of length. Used to measure distance between outside the distance. Wow, it's something about the sun and the earth, isn't it?
One AU is the distance from the sun to the earth.
Yeah, that's an astronomical.
So that's one parsec. So when Han, boasting about how fast his ship is, says, I can make the Kessel Run in only 12 parsecs. Yeah. Well, it's a unit of measurement. Run should be a set distance, right?
Is maybe the Kessel Run is 0 to 60.
No, what they've done...
Maybe it's a maze that they have to fly the ship through, and he just found the shortest way through the maze.
Exactly. Or actually, knowing Han's character, more likely it's him just trying to be a braggart to be like, oh, look how impressive I am. Well, like, we've all seen fanboys, I would assume, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Sort of the same way they're also, Hutch was basically trying to impress, impress the girls, talking about all this other kind of nerd stuff that they had no idea about. He just throwing out jargon to try to sound cool.
The first known usage of the word parsec was in 1913.
Really?
Interesting.
The canon explanation is that the Kessel system has like a very thick asteroid field,
mm-hmm.
and you have to weave through it. So getting to the planet the fastest way possible is to take the shortest, straightest line.
Yeah,
so the bravest pilot is the one who weaves the less. Mm-hmm. So the least. So doing the Kessel Run in the shortest distance is like a sign of a good pilot and a good ship, which is a fantastic explanation for how George Lucas got it wrong and thought a parsec was a unit of time instead of a unit of measurement.
It's like somebody saying I'm 3 light years old or something like that.
So I will say, by the way, we joked about Padme being the worst Disney princess ever. I'm happy that Disney has bought the rights to Star Wars because I think it can only improve. I love Star Wars, by the way. We are nerd raging. That doesn't mean we don't. The reason we nerd rage is
because we love
really
it.
Love these things.
My question is going to be, though, how is Mr. JJ
rage out of love? But I am very excited to see what is going to be done from Disney, because, as I said, Lucas, his dialogue and character development, he just doesn't have. But Disney can do that, I think.
Yeah, well, it's okay. They're going to have Abrams doing the directing.
Exactly.
The question is, who are they going to have
doing... And he likes Star Wars.
Yeah, yes. Who are they going to have doing the writing, though? The writing is really kind of the thing that's sidelined a lot of the time.
Yep.
But strong writing is very, very important.
But, though, there's also practical effects again, which we've seen already, I'm excited about.
I just searched on Wolfram Alpha, how fast is the Millennium Falcon? And it interpreted my question as the distance in which the Millennium Falcon can make the Kessel Run. And the result is less than 12 parsecs, according to Han Solo.
That is fantastic. Yeah. I love you, Wolfram Alpha.
But that's a nice example. We kind of excuse these from the original three movies because we love them so much. So we start to overlook their flaws, where we maybe exaggerate the flaws.
It's because, yeah, well, it is also, well, yeah, but it is also, you know, but it is also because of the new thing cannot be greater than the original thing, which we're so fond of.
Rose-colored glasses.
Exactly. Yeah. So you go back and look at some things, you're like, man, this was awesome. Like, I recently watched some 80s cartoons that I haven't seen since the 80s. And I'm like, how are my parents not raging alcoholics for the shows I used to watch? Like, I'm like, they just don't hold up, make no sense at all. But of course,
what sort of demented brain damage did I have to enjoy original series Transformers?
Watch Bionic 6 or Silverhawks. You understand what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Bionic 6 and Silverhawks were the two cartoons.
Silverhawks. Oh, my
God. I know.
I watched Thundercats not that long ago, and I couldn't get through an episode. I used to think this was so cool.
Look up
and
the,
I just can't.
Yeah. Look up the Thundercats blooper reels, by the way. They are hilarious. It's the actual cast just with audio takes, and it's, wow. Lino, like, you've never heard him before. Yeah. Definitely not
but
safe
I
for work.
I will say, I think that the Next Generation movies were definitely better out of the gate than the original series movies, because you've got Generations versus the motion picture.
Well, they had like a universe to follow at that, by that point. Like, they, like, throughout the series, they really spent the time to develop the Star Trek universe.
But I mean, Star Trek Insurrection is still a thing, and that was a god awful movie.
Star Trek: The Final Frontier is still a thing.
And Nemesis wasn't that great either.
Insurrection, Insurrection,
and I think Nemesis
and Insurrection are the two that were really, really bad, I think. And
which
Nemesis,
one was the one with Super Data?
That's Super, Nemesis.
That was Nemesis.
That was Nemesis. Yeah.
Don't worry, the skin.
Yeah, that's the one where the young Picard was bald for some reason.
I actually didn't have a problem with Insurrection. The only thing about Insurrection was it was a long episode.
Do you know what?
That's what it was. It wasn't a movie. It was a long episode.
Yeah,
so that's
what
people's big problems with. I have huge problems with Nemesis.
Nemesis, you know what they should have done in Nemesis? They should have had...
Not made it.
To play... what was the young Picard clone name? I forget.
Oh, jeez.
Shinzon.
They should have had... They should have had Patrick Stewart play Shinzon as well.
Ooh.
They should have had him play his mirror. He would have been the same age, but just a completely different background and totally evil. I think he could have pulled that off.
That would have been cool, actually. Well. Yeah.
I want someone to go through and like re-edit Nemesis, but do it again with adding the Bane mask and voice.
And we should
point understand the thing I'm saying.
Well, you know, if you think about it, I mean, in the movie, Bane grew up in that prison underground, and Shinzon grew up in a mine underground.
Yeah,
they are the same person.
Oh my God, Half-Life 3 confirmed, guys.
Half-Life 3 confirmed.
Oh, finally. Well, that's kind of random, but okay.
At first I thought that he was just to say, also nerd rage about this.
Well, there's one last thing I want to point out before we finish the show, because we're at the end of our third segment now. We were talking about how the next Star Wars movie is going to be done by a Star Wars fan, namely J.J. Abrams. We should point out that Nemesis was written and directed by a big Star Trek fan.
Yes, and you can see the early stages of the movie if you watch the documentary Trekkies.
Did the studio screw the movie up?
Yes.
Is that what happened?
It was centered around a space station, and there was the Scimitar as a ship, but there was this whole space station, and you didn't get the entire storyline, but you could definitely see that, you know, there was no young Picard. They took a character that and transformed it into that. They made Data a larger role. The fan, it appeared from the Trekkies documentary, it appeared that he had a very good Romulan storyline going on. Mm-hmm. And of course the studio's like, nobody knows what Romulans are, so we can't focus on them. We've got to have Picard. Yeah, everybody knows Picard. And we don't care about the rest of the bridge crew. It's just Picard and Data.
Right. Anyway, and they're definitely ripping. They're trying to kill Data the same way they killed Spock. And anyway, we're going to end the show there. I want to point out, I can't take the full credit for that whole Picard playing Shinzon thing. Is it Shinzon? It was Shinzon, yeah. That I actually got from another podcast I'm listening to called Trek Off. You can listen to it at trekoffpodcast.com.
You Trek Off.
That's exactly what it's supposed to be. It's not safe for work kind of talk or about radio. Star Trek all the time, and they make some good points, and that was one of them. I'm going to go through the usual spiel here again. Geekly.com, go over there, like our shows, and listen to them all there. You can find us on iTunes and on chsrfm.ca, of course. You can like our Facebook page, facebook.com/epiccsr. Our Twitter is at epiccsr. You can head on over to Geekly. You can find all of our Twitter accounts. You can follow all of us there individually, etc., etc., etc. We will see you again next time.
Epic is a Geekly production and published by the CHSR Broadcasting Corporation. The Epic theme music, Cheesy Lab, is written and produced by Kevin McLeod. It is provided under Creative Commons License Attribution 3.0. All views expressed on this program is solely those of the individual and not necessarily shared by Geekly Productions or CHSR Broadcasting Corporation.
Who does a good Jar Jar?
Why is everyone looking at me?
Sexy Chewbacca.
Sexy Chewbacca.
Bring me Solo and the Wookiee.
Wookiee pickup line.
Dark Knights on Kishi.
Log into Plenty of Wookiees.
Plenty of Wookiees. Plenty of fur.
That probably exists.
Fine, never mind. I'll go audition for Star Trek.
That's it. They don't.
Are you out of your goddamn Vulcan mind? I'm a doctor, not a Foley artist.